When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Today on the show, the first of a three-part series taking a deep dive and an up-close look at the Seahawks division opponents. All three, I would argue, have had really good off-seasons, both in free agency and in the draft. And so we're going to go one by one with those teams. And instead of just me giving you my opinion, because my Seahawks action green-colored glasses won't allow me to see those teams as objectively as I would like to. And so we're going to bring on experts from each side. And today, one of my favorite guests I've ever had on the show, Rob Guerrera, 49ers content creator. He's also on ESPN Radio. He does great work covering the 49ers. He's going to come on today and tell us everything we want or need to know. You might not want to know it, but you need to know it as a Seahawks fan, what we can expect to see from the 49ers based on what they've done this offseason. A big coaching change on the staff there, a couple of key free agent moves, some losses and some gains, some injury updates that are necessary, and then how they did in the draft and an up-close look at some of those prospects. Rob Guerrera talking 49ers up next on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Viens.
Byron Murphy introduced officially yesterday in Seattle as the first round pick of the Seattle Seahawks. A week out, how are you feeling now about some of those draft picks as you learn more about them? How are you feeling about Tyrese Knight now that you hear some of the opinions about him? Some of the things that guys like Jim Nagy have come out and talked about. Now that you've heard John Schneider, Mike McDonald talk about what he saw in that young linebacker. Always love to hear your thoughts on that kind of stuff. Before we get started, hit that subscribe button on YouTube and the thumbs up to like the video. And if you hit that bell, you'll get notification of all future episodes. If you prefer audio episodes, you can subscribe on any platform that you prefer. But on Spotify, you can actually listen to the episodes ad-free for a small monthly fee. I'll put that link in the description as well as the link to buy me a coffee if you want to do that to help support me and the show, or you can hit that super thanks down at the bottom. Let's get into this. Rob Guerrera joining me from the 49ers standpoint. Take a deep dive, a look at the Seahawks divisional opponent. Are they still the best team in the division? I ask him that. You could probably predict his answer, but with a caveat. Let's go. Here's Rob. Welcome back to the show, Rob Guerrera. And before we get started, I want to just call it a disclaimer for any of my viewers who are watching this right now wondering why the heck are we going to spend a half an hour talking about the San Francisco 49ers on my Seahawks Forever podcast. It's because, in part, also, Rob's a big Mariner fan, you guys. So cut him a little bit of slack. Actually, even does a Mariners podcast in addition to all this 49ers content. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me. And look, you should spend a half hour on the best team in the division. Frankly, you should probably spend an hour on us.
Well, you opened that door. Let me start there. I was going to ask you this at the very end. It's hard not to like what the Rams have done this offseason. Like, how close is that margin now?
I think it would be a hell of a lot closer if Aaron Donald hadn't retired. Yeah. I think honestly, like, that's really the biggest thing that's preventing me from saying, hey, the Rams might be a real problem in the NFC West. Not that the Rams aren't good, but Aaron Donald is a massive loss in the middle of that defense. It's impossible to replace him So I like a lot of the moves the Rams have made.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're quite at the 49ers level just yet.
Although they did draft a WSU Cougar in Brennan Jackson, the 49ers didn't draft anyone from WSU. So I got to give them a little bit of credit there. I want to run through this with you. You know, the 49ers obviously coming off the disappointment of just a classic overtime Super Bowl loss. You know, they make some changes on the coaching staff, some changes on defense. We'll talk about free agency, a couple of big losses up front. They choose not to pursue bringing Chase Young back. They have to let Eric Armstead go for salary cap reasons. Still have Javon Hargrave, still have a guy named Bosa. They made some cool additions in free agency. Before we get to the draft, what did you like or not like about their personnel moves leading up to the draft?
I think that the one thing that you can say about Kyle Shanahan when it comes to building the roster is they know when it's time to move off of guys. They know who not to pay. They let Mike McGlinchey go to the Denver Broncos instead of paying him $80 million. They were right to let Eric Armstead go. They asked him to take a massive pay cut. He didn't want to do it. I don't blame him at all. Why? I don't think any player should ever take a pay cut, but he wasn't on the field enough. He had that plantar fasciitis, which, you know, it can crop up at any time. He could be going along perfect and it could just crop up and that can take you out. He's battled injuries. He just wasn't on the field enough to justify the salary that they were going to have to pay him. And it's a tough pill to swallow because when he was on the field, he was very, very good. But they generally know when to cut bait with guys. They're returning all 11 starters on offense. And they had the best offense in the league last year by a ton of metrics. The defensive line is not as good as it was a year ago, but I think the secondary could be better. And I think that's kind of the shift that they are going through this year. I think they kind of realize we can't build the team through the defensive line. We have to stock up more on the secondary. And I think they've done that.
You mentioned the offense. We're going to get to that because there's obviously some big storylines that are brewing there and we'll continue to do so until there's some resolution. But sticking on the defensive side of the ball, the big change in the offseason, they move on from Steve Wilks. That was kind of a rocky relationship the entire season. And I do find it fascinating that in the same offseason that the Seahawks move away from Pete Carroll after 15 years and go with a completely different defensive scheme that Mike McDonald's bringing with him. The 49ers try to solidify what they're doing defensively by finding a guy that worked under Pete Carroll for 8 years, because that's really the scheme that they want to use. And they felt like Wilkes got away from a little bit. Your thoughts on Nick Sorensen as the DC?
I don't think Nick Sorensen is the DC. I think Brandon Staley.
You think it's Brandon Staley?
They hired him to be the quote unquote assistant head coach. I think what they really wanted to do is hire Brandon Staley to be the DC, but they knew they were going to get criticism. They knew they were going to get blowback because the story that they are selling you is, well, we hired Steve Wilks and he just didn't know our system well enough. We hired him to run our system. He didn't know it well enough. It didn't work. And so you can't do that and fire Steve Wilks after they were third in the NFL in points allowed this year and then bring in Brandon Staley, an outsider who doesn't run your system, and right, ask them to run the system. It would be the same mistake all over again. So what they're trying, the way they're trying to thread that needle is, well, Staley's going to be the assistant coach and Nick Sorensen is actually going to be the defensive coordinator. He's going to call the plays and he knows our system because he's been here for a few years. I think that's a bunch of baloney. I think it's Brandon Staley's system. I think if you look at the players they went after in free agency and the players they drafted, they're guys that can do the types of things that Brandon Staley likes to do. They're going to tweak the system. I have no idea if it's going to work out or not, but that is the narrative that they are trying to sell you in San Francisco. Mm.
And from the outside looking in, it was fascinating watching that roller coaster last year because, you know, we're hearing all the criticism of Steve Wilks, but yet we're seeing the 49ers go out pretty much on a weekly basis and kick everyone's ass on defense. A couple of late injuries last year. Hufanga tears his ACL week 11. ACL tears aren't what they used to be. We saw Jordan Brooks last year ready to go week one after tearing his ACL later than week 11. So I'd like the prognosis on him. And then Dre Greenlaw with that really unfortunate accident, I guess you could call it, or incident in the Super Bowl, running off the sideline, tearing his Achilles, a little longer recovery time there. Two key cogs of that defense. What's the outlook for both of them?
Yeah, the Dre Greenlaw one is just an absolute killer. It'd be one thing if it happened on the field during a play, right?
Yeah.
That Yeah. Okay, you could swallow that. At least that's a normal football thing. I mean, he was running onto the field from the sideline in the Super Bowl. This is the second straight playoffs where the 49ers have had a key defensive player get hurt on the sideline. Dre Greenlaw in the Super Bowl last year, and Nick Bosa got hurt standing on the sideline in the NFC Championship game against the Eagles the year before. Just fluke things that are happening to the 49ers. But I think it's going to be some time before we see Dre again. He could open the season on the PUP list. You know, Achilles is a scary injury. Not everybody comes back from the Achilles. So I think when you put Dre Greenlaw out there again, he's got to be good to go. He's got to be able to return, not just to play, but return to performance. And he's one of the best linebackers in the league when he is healthy. So I think it's going to be a while before you see him. Hufanga, I think you'll see relatively early, but they also really like Jair Brown when he came in, filled in for Hufanga last year. Safety is sort of an interesting spot because they had Tashawn Gibson there last year, who they kind of signed off the scrap heap and ended up playing really well for them for the past 2 years. He's a free agent now. He doesn't know if he wants to come back and play. So there sort of is an opening. If they wanted to play Hufanga and Jair Brown at the same time, they could. I don't know that they want to do that. And so safety is one of the spots where there's sort of a question mark. And they also drafted Malik Mustafa in the draft. So there's another guy to throw into that mix.
In regards to Greenlaw, I know this wasn't considered a good linebacker class, but are you surprised they didn't take one?
No. Well, they took one. Tatum Bethune was their last pick in the seventh round. He's a linebacker. I don't have high hopes for him or anything, but they did take one. And they also drafted two linebackers last year. So this sort of, you know, they've tried to address it. Now, are those guys any good? They didn't really play much last year, so it's hard to say. But I wasn't stunned that they didn't go linebacker just because they've sort of already did that.
Now let's get into the draft. So you just told me before I hit record that for your draft show, your reaction show, you had prepared a bunch of graphics for guys they might take at the end of the first round, but you did not prepare a graphic for this young man, Ricky Pearsall, the receiver out of Florida, who as soon as the pick was made, all the speculation, all the run-up to the draft was, are they shopping Debo? Are they shopping Ayuk? Can they work out extensions with one or both of them? When this pick was made, what were your first thoughts?
My first thought was, damn it, that's one guy I don't have a graphic for, first and foremost. I mean, geez, that's a whole thing. But they were shopping Debo, and they were shopping Debo Samuel. But even if they weren't, they would still have needed a wide receiver because their third wide receiver, Juwan Jennings, is on a restricted free agent contract this year. He's going to be a free agent after the year. They're probably not going to pay him just because he's going to want more than what he contributes to the offense. And more than likely, I think this is Debo Samuel's last year with the 49ers. I think they recognize that he is a depreciating asset. He is unreliable when it comes to showing up in shape, number one, and number two, being on the field. He misses games every single year. Yeah. And they're at the point where availability has to be your best ability. And with Debo Samuel, it's been frustrating. He got hurt in the Super Bowl, right? He got hurt against the Packers. He missed basically the entire Packer game. If I can't rely on you and I'm building a game plan around you, those two things are not compatible when I'm trying to win a Super Bowl. So you're really looking at a situation in 2025 where you might have Brandon Ayuk and what at wide receiver? Ronnie Bell, who was a seventh round pick last year. Like, you needed to restock the cupboard. So I wasn't stunned that they went wide receiver in round one, especially because like 2 weeks before the draft, all the 49ers beat writers started mocking wide receivers to the 49ers. So it was like, okay, we could see the writing on the wall. And Pearsall was the pick. That, I think, surprised some people. But the more I read and the more I found out about them, the more I kind of like what they did.
Yeah, it was a great wide receiver class. There were still a bunch of guys on the board, and this really kind of keyed a huge run that even lasted into the early second round on a bunch of wide receivers taken in a short range. What is it about Pearsall that makes him such a good fit?
I think it's his athleticism. You know, the 49ers loaded up on athletes in this draft in pretty much every single round. Their problem that they ran into, if you go look at their worst offensive performances last year, whether it was against the Vikings or the Browns or the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, it was teams that could play tight man coverage. They didn't have enough guys that could separate from man coverage. IU can do it, but Juwan Jennings really can't. Debo Samuel really can't. They went out in this draft and they got guys that are athletes that can separate from man coverage. And that is what Ricky Pearsall can do. He knows how to run routes. He knows how to get open. He knows how to be in a consistent spot for his quarterbacks And he ran a 4.41. Adding a little speed to the offense never hurts. So I think what I liked about the Pearsall move is that you're not going to ask him to do anything different than what he did in college. If you go look at the crossers and the overs, he ate in the middle of the field at Florida. And that is exactly where he's going to need to be for the 49ers. And I always like when you draft a guy that has been doing the thing that you are going to ask him to do in the NFL.
And he had the best catch in college football last year. I mean, the one we've all seen it, right? The backhanded one-hander just looked like Velcro with the ball sticking to it. Impressive skill set. They weren't done at receiver. They had three picks in the fourth round. They go Jacob Cowing out of Arizona. How does he fit in?
So he's another guy, incredible athlete, 4.38 40-yard dash. Of everybody that ran at the combine, Jacob Cowing got up to the fastest speed on the first 5 yards of the 40-yard dash. He got, I think, almost 15 miles per hour in the first 5 yards of the 40-yard dash. That is explosive acceleration. Guys that can get open, guys that can get open quickly. Now, he's only, I think, 5'8", which is actually 2 inches shorter than I am, believe it or not. he's not a very big guy, but he's a fast guy. He's, again, another route runner. And I almost wonder, I literally just finished a show about this about 25 minutes ago, if you're going to see a shift from the 49ers offense, instead of being run first, I almost think if you're going to start to shift into more of a pass first offense with all these receivers and with a quarterback now who you actually aren't afraid to let throw the football.
Yeah. In the second round, they go defense, and you know, secondary is one area as good as that defense has been over the last couple of years where there's been some consternation about the personnel back there. In all of the post-draft assessments that I'm seeing, Renardo Green's being talked about pretty universally as one of the maybe one of the bigger steals in this draft in a good cornerback class to be available there at the end of the second round. It's great value.
They needed to upgrade a corner. You know, their big free agent acquisition last year was Isaiah Oliver. Steve Wilks called him the best nickel corner on the market. He was clearly Wilks's guy. And he was a complete disaster for the 49ers. He literally lost his starting spot before the season started. They asked Kyle Shanahan, like, oh, you've got Isaiah Oliver is going to be your nickel. He was like, not necessarily. And everybody was like, whoa, wait a minute. This was your big free agent guy that you went out and got. It was a disaster there. You know, the 49ers have a bunch of guys at that spot who are okay it being in the right place. Like, they're good enough and athletic enough to run with the receiver. But then when the ball is in the air, they completely panic and they freak out and they either allow the catch or they just mug the receiver and they draw a flag. And it showed up over and over and over again for the 49ers. They needed to get better there. And they got a guy in Renardo Green who I think led his conference in pass breakups last year. He doesn't panic when the ball is in the air. He doesn't have a ton of interceptions. I think he only has one career interception, but he doesn't panic when the ball is in the air. He knows how to make a play on the football, and the 49ers just don't have enough defensive backs that can do that. And, oh, by the way, Mooney Ward, their number one corner, is a free agent after the year, and D'Amador Lenore, their number two corner, is a free agent after the year. So, again, they needed another body.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And then the 49ers took one of my favorite players in this draft, a guy that was on my my guys list, but you know, ultimately was not deemed as necessary in my eyes after the Seahawks selected Christian Haynes, and that's Dominic Pooney. This guy, I didn't get to him until kind of late in the process, but once I started watching his tape, he's hard not to love, and I see that our lads already has him on their depth chart as a starter. Are the 49ers hoping this guy can be plug and play?
I think so. And I think they should. The 49ers' weakness on the offensive line is the interior, clearly. As bad as Colton McKivitz is at right tackle, the interior of that offensive line is really, it's a weakness. And you had to improve there. And that's where Dominic Pooney fits. He's got experience playing all five positions, but he can play guard. He can play center. And to me, I look at his skill set and everything that I've heard and read about him, and I look at the 49ers interior offensive line and I say, he's got to be better than one of those guys is my hope. So I don't care if it's left guard, center, or right guard, but to me, I think that you can improve with Dominic Pooney. He didn't allow a sack at all last year. He didn't allow a sack in his last 26 starts in college. And there aren't many spots on the 49ers where you can improve on offense, but this is clearly one. And I am very, very hopeful that they could do it because especially at right guard, they've been splitting time at right guard with John Feliciano and Spencer Burford and Daniel Brunskill was there last year. I never heard of teams splitting time at one of the starting offensive line positions. That's not what you want. You want guys that are all going to be there to get that continuity,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you have two starting guards, you don't have one. So Hopefully Dominic Pooney can step up and take that spot at right guard or at center, and that would be a big improvement.
It's amazing to see his pass protection numbers because when you turn on the tape, the thing that jumps out to you are his movement skills, his ability to get to the second level, and the way he likes to just drive dudes into the turf. So it's a fun combination there. You mentioned tackle, obviously. Trent Williams, 35, looks 25, still in the prime of his career. He doesn't look to be slowing down anytime soon. But you were critical of Colton McKivitz. They bring him back on a one-year deal. They don't take a tackle in the draft. How much did that surprise you in a good tackle class?
That surprised me. They took one late, but like they didn't address it early in what everybody said was the best tackle class in years.
Yeah.
I did say this going into the draft. They extended Colton McKivitz. I think the 49ers did not see it nearly as much of a need as we all did. I think from the 49ers' perspective, they're like, was he an all-pro? No. But you know what? We just got to the Super Bowl with this guy, and we led the league in rushing. Like, how bad is he really? Like, do we really need to freak out to go get one? So I think the 49ers' outlook was always, if somebody falls to us, great. But if not, we are not going to force it. And I think that's what you saw them do in the draft. Now, we'll see if that can, you know, hold up. Because here's the thing. He's always facing the other team's best pass rusher. Because if you've got a good pass rusher on defense, you're going to say, should we have that guy go up against Trent Williams or should we have him go up against Colton McKivitz? So he's going to face the other team's best. And the 49ers apparently are comfortable with that. We'll see how it shakes out. But I don't think they looked at it as much of a need as we look at it.
So I have to correct myself here because I had to glance at the draft list again when you said they took a tackle. Do they view Jarrett Kingston, sixth round pick out of USC? He's a guy that's played guard and tackle. Do they view him as someone that can play outside?
I think they're hoping he can play outside, but I think kind of deep down in places they don't talk about at parties, they probably think he's better suited to the interior.
Yeah.
And I will say he does have experience there. He's a big, strong guy. I think he had the second most reps on the bench of anybody at the combine, any offensive lineman. So there's potential there. But look, when you draft a guy that late, it's kind of more a wing and a prayer than anything else.
And it also reminds me how I was incorrect earlier when I said that the 49ers did not draft a Washington State Cougar because he began his career there before transferring to USC. So there you go. How about the rest of the division? We talked a little bit about the Rams, but what's your view on what the Cardinals did in the draft this year and what the Seahawks did?
Honestly, I've been knee deep in 49ers draft lore. And then this is my arrogance showing. I don't really care what the Seahawks and the Cardinals did in the draft because you're so far away from where we are. At least that's what I think. But I'm much more afraid of the Seahawks now with Mike McDonald than
that,
I ever
that would be my follow-up question. Yeah, is your thoughts from afar, kind of outside looking in on that change?
Because I was like, we got Pete Carroll. Like,
right.
Kyle, he knows, like the Seahawks are never beating the 49ers as long as Pete Carroll and Geno Smith are there. And that's really what you saw. I don't think the Seahawks beat the 49ers after Russell Wilson left. Kyle knew what he was doing there. Now, not only do you get a new coach, so you introduce some unknown, but your coach is the guy that orchestrated the game plan on Christmas where the Ravens just absolutely disassembled the 49ers offense. There was some flukiness to it because some of the tip balls ended up being interceptions, but really, the Ravens physically dominated the 49ers in that game. And that's what has me nervous about the Seahawks because that's the guy that's your head coach now. And it's not like Seattle. Seattle has some athletes on that side of the ball. So that's the part of it that gives me pause is just when we sort of had a beat on Pete Carroll and we could pay him back for the decade plus of beatdowns that he and Russ handed out,
yeah.
He's now gone. And now you got what I think is a good coach in Mike McDaniel.
It's interesting, and I can't wait to see how it plays out this season, especially with all the, you know, when McDonald was hired, the comparisons were, in fact, there were even some quotes that, you know, this is the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay of defense in the NFL right now. Young, bright, forward thinking, kind of ahead of the curve. To see how all the game planning and strategy is going to work between all these guys, I think we're seeing it already. You know, the Rams go out and just absolutely in free agency add a ton of beef to the inside of their interior offensive line, yep. Maybe anticipating that the defensive front they have to go against in San Francisco, and assuming that they're going to fix it in Seattle because that's a Mike McDonald priority, you know, getting ready for that. You mentioning that the 49ers needed more receivers that can beat press coverage. They didn't have to worry about that when they played Seattle under Pete Carroll. It was mostly zone. It was mostly off man. Mm-hmm. And you know, Mike McDonald, much more press man oriented. They go out and draft two press man corners on day three this year to add to that. It's funny because a couple of years ago, well, let's see. Let's go back 4 or 5 years. NFC was maybe the best conference or the best division in football. And then Arizona fell off a cliff. Seattle had their struggles. They trade Russell Wilson. The Rams, even that roster ages. They had to, they were salary cap strapped. Now all of a sudden, a year later, like it kind of looks like the NFC West as a whole might be positioning themselves again to be really good top to bottom.
I think it's going to be strong. I think even in Arizona, Jonathan Gannon clearly has his stuff together more than Cliff Kingsbury ever did. Like, he's not a joke. I think Cliff Kingsbury was a terrible head coach. I think he did less with more there than maybe some other coaches could have done. But the Cardinals are not going to be a joke. The Seahawks hired, like you said, possibly, you know, the Sean McVay, the Kyle Shanahan on defense. They were a playoff team 2 years ago. So what are we, you know, obviously their roster is not barren. And the Rams, like you said, loaded up. And I keep telling people, Sean McVay is a damn good coach. Like, he's never really had a terrible year. He's had like one down year in his entire career. And this was supposed to be the time where the Rams were, you know, paying the credit card bill for all their picks moves, right? They were supposed to be bad for a few years. Where are those years, Dan? I'm still waiting for them, okay? So you're right. The NFC West is going to be a bear next year.
Yeah, the coaching job McVay did last year when we all thought that that defense was essentially Aaron Donald and 10 blank spaces. It was just phenomenal. Unbelievable what he was able to do. Last question for you. So the 49ers are on this outstanding run. Every single year, they're at the top of the league. Super Bowl pick, Super Bowl favorite. They haven't cashed in on one yet. How much, if any, pressure are John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan under to get a trophy?
From the fans, as much pressure as there could possibly be. From the team, no pressure whatsoever. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan could go 0-16 this year, and Jed York is not firing either one of them.
Okay.
He loves them.
Well, let's test that theory.
Let's not. They make the playoffs every year. They're going to have primetime games again, I'm sure, when the schedule comes out later this month. They're playing home playoff games at Levi's. Jed York is cashing those checks and he loves it. Do you notice they made the Super Bowl last year? All of a sudden, Jed York was everywhere. He was doing interviews when he wasn't even scheduled to do interviews. He did an interview with Kay Adams Super Bowl week that like nobody even knew about. All of a sudden, it was just like, that's Jed York walking out on the set. Like, what is happening? So he loves it. He loves it. They're in the mix and he loves all of it. So Kyle and John are not going anywhere.
Well, I can't wait till the schedule comes out this time next week. I think we'll finally see it. God, the league pushes it back every year. They want to make a bigger and bigger event out of it. Yeah. And then we'll see when those matchups happen. I hope we get one early. You know, I felt like last year they were just, we shouldn't have to wait 10 weeks to get our first 49ers Seahawks matchup. So I can't wait to see how that works out. Thanks again for taking time to come on the show, Rob. Always good to have you.
Anytime, Dan, you know that.
All right, we'll see you soon. So I'll be doing the same thing with the Rams and the Cardinals. Jake Ellenbogen will be joining me again shortly next week sometime. He's moving his studio currently, and then I've got I'm in communications with someone who also creates content for the Cardinals, and we'll get that soon as well. Also, Corbin Smith will be joining me on the show again next week to wrap up his thoughts on the entire Seahawks offseason. He's also in Seattle currently. He's at the Seahawks rookie minicamp, so he'll have some firsthand impressions of how the new young guys, including some of the undrafted free agents, get his thoughts on some of those guys and how they fit in coming up next week as well. Until then, follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever, so you're always up to date on anything I'm doing. Otherwise, forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for watching, you guys.